For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Chris Messini. My guest today is Steve Almond. Almond is the author of 10 books of fiction and nonfiction, including the New York Times bestsellers Candy Freak and Against Football. His latest book is William Stoner and the Battle for the Inner Life. It's part of the Bookmarked series from IG Publishers, in which authors reflect upon a book which significantly influenced their development as a writer. Part craft book, part cultural commentary, and part memoir, Steve Almond's addition to this series explores the 1965 novel Stoner by John Williams. Largely ignored upon its publication and panned by critics for its style of unrelieved narration, Stoner tells the story of a country boy who leaves home, becomes a university professor, and dedicates his life to the teaching of English. Steve Almond will be in Seattle September 15th through 17th, teaching a series of workshops and generative classes at Hugo House. And he joins me now to talk about Stoner and his new book. Steve Almond, thanks for joining me.
Good to be with you.
So I thought we'd start by talking about the Bookmark series and how this came about. Why'd you decide to write this book about Stoner in particular?
Well, honestly, a wonderful writer named Curtis Smith, he asked me if I'd heard about, you know, this series, and then sent me his book, which is about Slaughterhouse-Five, one of my favorite novels. And I immediately, the moment he mentioned this, writers getting to write about their favorite novel, I was like, boom. I know exactly what I would write about because I've been thinking about and writing about Stoner for, 20 years.
Yeah, that strikes me about your book is it seems like you've been thinking about Stoner and the way that it has impacted not only your writing life, but your life in general. You talk about the way in which your reading of the book has evolved over time and the way that it's impacted various areas of your life, not just writing, but the professional feuds that you've had and your relationship with your wife and your kids. Yeah. So, yeah, it's rare that we get that kind of in-depth look at how a work of art has actually touched somebody else's life.
It's rare that it gets written about, but yeah. Everybody experiences it,
right?
Especially with literature. I mean, I could say, like, Chris, what's the book for you? For my wife, it's Little Women. Right. She was reading it every year when she was a kid, and when she was 15, it was about the fantasy of living in a family that was run by a benign, loving, attentive matriarch, and that was full of girls who were supportive, which was the opposite of the world she was living in. Now 20 years later, 30 years later, it's very much a book about the criminalizing of female volition and autonomy and her life and the life that's all around us in the culture. So, great literature has this effect of speaking louder and louder. So Stoner seems to be this quiet story of a guy who's kind of monkishly devoted to academia, but when you really dig into the guts of it, it's about everything, like every great novel. It's about everything. And as you, as a reader, change and evolve, the book becomes a new book. So I pick it up at 28, and it's a book about how literature is going to save me and redeem me and allow me to start paying attention to my life. And, a few years later, it's about feuds and conflicts and how we consciously and unconsciously engineer them in our lives, because I was embroiled in all these ridiculous and inevitable feuds. And a few years after that, it's about teaching and that sacred mission of trying to transmit love and attention to students and wake them up in the way you've been awoken. And then it's about marriage, and then it's about raising kids, and then it's about death. I mean, that is what literature is, what Nabokov means when he says there's no such thing as reading, there's only rereading. He means that a book is reading us as much as we're reading a book.
Yeah, I think that's true. And so if you look at the Bookmarked series, as you mentioned, authors writing about their favorite novels, yours is the only one that has sort of a subtitle,
I insisted.
Yeah, so it's William Stoner and the Battle for the Inner Life, because you talk about that battle in the opening pages.
Yeah, sure.
Read that section?
I would love to read it, because it's it does sound kind of weird and squishy, and it's an awkward title, like William Stoner, The Battle for the Intellect. What's that about? It's like got a million words. It's, as usual, an idiotic marketing decision. But I really felt like, look, you know, I don't want to just say, this book's so great, read this book. I wanted to say, hey, this book is revolutionary, and it's revolutionary because it's speaking to our moment, our kind of great national delusion. So I'll read a little bit of that. By inner life, I mean simply the private realm of thought and feeling through which we come to know ourselves. I stress this term because I believe our entire species is, at this perilous moment, engaged in a pitched battle for the inner life, one so pervasive it has become as invisible as air. This struggle has been with us all along. It's ordained by consciousness. Among all creatures, humans face a unique burden. Do we choose to face the solitude of selfhood, the misfortunes engineered by fate and folly, the many ways we disfigure love into cruelty? But over the past half century, the course of my lifetime, this struggle has degenerated into an all-out assault. To focus on the inner life today, to read books, to think deeply, to imagine with no ulterior agenda, to reflect on painful or confusing experiences, is to defy the clamoring edicts of our age, the by-messages, the ingrained habits of passive consumption and complaint. It is not yet a crime, merely an arcane and isolating practice. Vast sectors of our economy are devoted to the magical notion that potions and products and garish spectacle can banish our shame and doubt, and thus corporations which promote and profit by a pervasive state of agitation must eradicate the hauntings of the inner life.
That was my guest, Steve Almond, reading from his book, William Stoner and the Battle for the Inner Life.
And really, what I mean there is fundamentally more profound than we are losing ourselves. We are losing the ability and the willingness to pay attention to ourselves. I really mean something more fundamental, which is, hey, you know, these devices and phones that we've become so attached to are robbing us of solitude and of selfhood and of the capacity to reflect, especially in complicated, painful experiences. William Stoner is not a deeply self-reflective guy, but what he is experiencing or trying to reckon with are really painful and confusing moments from his life. And what makes the book so riveting is that the author is choosing to focus on the most doubt-choked, bewildering moments from this guy's life. And we all know that. We have all been William Stoner in that sense. We are all leading lives of great tumult, but sometimes those are very private moments that aren't, you can't dramatize in a TV show or, you know, with sort of big explosions. It's something that happens deep within us.
You described the book as riveting just now, which I think is, in my reading, also an apt description. But if you sort of just described the book to somebody, it'd be difficult for them to understand how it could be riveting. Because, like I said in the beginning, it's essentially a book of just one sort of mundane college professor's life. So, right. So why does it work? Why do we get so drawn into this character when we read Stoner?
Yeah, so I've thought a lot about its mechanisms of enthrallment, and I should add that, like, when I was 28, I had no idea how to answer that question, and probably when I was 38, I had no idea, and at 48, I was sort of groping towards an answer, but now I feel like I do have a pretty clear sense, and part of it is that that opening, which basically says William Stoner was a nobody who nobody remembered, basically says to the reader, does two things that are incredible. I think it's the most daring opening of any novel I can think of. Mm. The first thing it says is, this narrator is going to be able to move through time and space with great authority and assurance. And the second thing it does is it says, stop thinking in the traditional terms of what heroism is, as largely defined by literature and maybe the culture at large. That is, you kill lots of people, you have sex with lots of people, you grab lots of power, you win the girl, you do the heroic, dangerous, calamitous thing. Mm. Stop using the math of the obituary to judge people's lives, because actually, everybody comes equipped with an inner life. If we say that Stoner was, you know, died in obscurity according to the people around him, what are we left with? Well, what was happening inside of him? And that's where Williams is able to go with such precision.
And so you've alluded to this a couple of times, but I wanted to return to, because one of my other favorite sections of your book, William Stoner and the Battle for the Inner Life, is You're talking, it's towards the end of your book, and you're talking about the end of Stoner, the novel, and it comes about, you're talking about his death, and the quote from Stoner is, he contemplates the failure that his life must have been. And you say this judgment is, quote, the byproduct of a mind that measures worth using the math of the obituary, in which only the visibly heroic survives the final edit, life minus the inner life. I love that, life minus the inner life, because the opening of Stoner, we get his obituary, essentially.
Right.
Where he was born, where he died, where he worked. And then the entire rest of the novel is everything in between. So can you unpack that a little bit? Because you've mentioned that phrase a few times, and I think it's really instructive, the math of the obituary. What do you mean by that?
I mean the delusion that we somehow are going to live on forever because we achieve thus and such.
Mm.
That is the grand delusion. We are stardust. You know, the story of every human life is inherently one of obscurity. We have the miracle of consciousness. We're maybe the only creatures in the entire history of whatever the universe is who have had occasion to consider themselves and whether they led a quote-unquote meaningful existence. We're alive for a little flicker, and then we're gone. And the question is, how much did we love? How much did we pay attention? How much did we transmit our love into the world as a parent, as a teacher, as a writer, or as a doctor, or as a social worker, or a teacher, whatever it is? But we don't have a vocabulary to even talk about it because we're completely preoccupied by some kind of diluted idea of fame or being known by the world, or if we just create enough great art, then our names will live on forever. I don't care, honestly. I'm not going to be around to enjoy any of that. The question is, how deeply did I reach in my work and in my relationships to try to connect with people and pay attention before it's too late? Because you don't last forever, at least in my formulation. You know, we are all going to meet that same fate. And the question that we'll be asking, I think, and the question that Stoner poses at the end of his life is, who was I? What was I up to? How much did I pay attention?
My guest has been Steve Almond, author of the new book, William Stoner and the Battle for the Inner Life. He'll be in the Northwest September 15th through 17th, teaching a series of classes at Hugo House in Seattle. Steve Almond, thank you so much for joining me.
It's always a pleasure, Chris. Thanks so much.